On the Shore is back. Another Monday, another show, another big week in Chicago baseball. It's really a great time to be a baseball fan in the city. Cubs playing well this week. White Sox got swept by the Yankees in what was, I'm not going to sit here and blame the White Sox at all for getting swept on the road by New York when they had to face Gerrit Cole in the middle series and they had a triple play pulled off on them in game one. Yeah, it sucks that you walk in a winning run in the bottom of the ninth, but you leave one over the heart of the plate to Aaron Judge, it might have been just a different story. It might have been a way different score, too, had he gotten it. They're still the only team in the AL Central that I believe has any sort of playoff opportunity. And we'll get to that a little later in the show. Also, Cubs, are they buyers? Are they sellers? What are the Chicago Cubs now? What can they be throughout the rest of the season? Do they have enough depth in the starting pitching to really become a playoff team? Can they maybe win the Central after having a really great series against St. Louis? But before we get to that, we have some news on this Monday. We didn't get an opportunity to talk about it because of the timing of the podcast, but this is a relevant story for Chicago sports. Why? Because if you live in the city of Chicago, you are either terrified of Aaron Rodgers or you're a Packers fan that lives here and you love Aaron Rodgers. Those are kind of the two experiences, Max, that this city has with Aaron Rodgers. In fact, I'd make an argument, he is the most popular quarterback in the history of the city of Chicago because of the amount of people from Green Bay or are Packers fans that live in this city, specifically on the north side where you and I roam. There's a lot of Packers fans. So Aaron Rodgers is a big deal, and this news is a big deal for the city because, hey, maybe the Bears don't have to play him. That's another big reason for it. Your thoughts on Rodgers skipping his first OTA of his career?
I think it still doesn't tell the whole story yet. I mean, I think that we're still figuring out exactly how this is going to end, but it obviously continues to feed into the narrative that was created on draft night by Adam Schefter. Shout out to him. You know, the weird thing about Adam and telling that story was that, again, there was no news. This is news. Him not participating in OTAs. This is news. This is honestly when the news probably, this is the first time we should really be talking about it this as a big deal. It's a big deal now because if you're not going to participate with the team, then obviously you don't really want to be with the team.
Oh, you're not in a quarterback, especially because you're saying, hey, I'm not taking a leadership role here. That means you're really unhappy because if you want to be a great quarterback in this league, you do show up to OTAs. You do show up to OTAs. You show up to everything. Why? Because you want as many people to show up to those things as possible because you're the team leader. You're the representer from coach to team most of the time, especially a player like Aaron Rodgers. And we've seen some of the comments from Packers players. They have no interest in playing without Aaron Rodgers. The coaching staff has no interest in playing without Aaron Rodgers. What sucks for Green Bay is it wasn't the coaches. It wasn't the players. It was the front office. It's the organization. And Aaron's just tired of that. And it's like working at a company. They won't give you a raise. They won't give you a raise. You love your coworkers. You love the environment you work in. You even like your boss, your personal boss. But that corporation you work for refuses to do the things, give you enough vacation time, they pay you enough money. You get unhappy. You get unsettled. And it doesn't really matter how well you get along with everybody at work or how much you enjoy your job. You're going to look for a new destination. And that's exactly what Aaron Rodgers is doing. And I think this trade, what do you put the percentage at that this trade is executed?
Well, first of all, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is looking for a new situation. This is where I think the story got out of hand and is wrong. I don't think Aaron Rodgers really feels the need or desire to even play anymore. I mean, I think that the end game situation here is that he wants to do everything in his power to get this general manager out. I think that he deserves to be paid more money. And this isn't, so when Carson Palmer in Cincinnati was unhappy and then acted like he was going to retire, right? We all knew that he really didn't want to because guess what? He had not won a Super Bowl. He had not been an MVP. There was a lot in football that he had yet to accomplish, right? Same with Brett Favre. The whole reason that we knew he was going to still hang around was that he loves the game of football. He wanted to win as many Super Bowls as possible. Aaron Rodgers has accomplished what he set out to do in football. So that's why I think it's, I think he would have to be really sold on an organization for this trade that we've talked about on and off for weeks, really for a month now, to go through. Because you have to sell it to him. And at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers had a lot of fun hosting Jeopardy, right? He's had a lot of fun playing the game of football. I don't know how fun it is anymore for him. You know, you got to pay him. He's an MVP. He's accomplished everything that he's wanted to do as a professional quarterback. And I think he would prefer, the narrative that we're missing is that he would prefer to stay in Green Bay. I think in most situations.
I don't agree with that.
You don't think so?
No, because I think this is a guy who grew up in Southern California. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who
went to Cal.
Is not a family man. And the reason for that is his family was too religious for him, too conservative. And you and I have both been to the city of Green Bay. A city is a very, very loose term for what that area is. Like, Green Bay is essentially smaller than where I grew up and where you grew up. And neither of our the only sports teams in the two places you and I grew up are summer collegiate baseball teams who average less than 2,000 fans per game. And Green Bay has a professional football team. That's just a tough market to live in. Now he's engaged to an actress, right? He's engaged to somebody who, one, is going to make him feel very confident, going to make him demand respect from the organization. And, you know, as I've grown up, I think the influence of women in a man's life, especially one you're about to get married to, is very important. And
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. But it's like my fiance right now, because I'm in the same boat that Aaron Rodgers is in. Now, he's 39 and a multimillionaire, and I'm not a quarterback, right? But we're both engaged. And I'm telling you, you stand up for yourself a little more at work when she tells you to, right? And if she wants to move, like I just put this question up to Jess, my fiance. I said, okay, if I were Aaron Rodgers and they were treating me like this and we just got engaged and you had grown up your whole life in Southern California and you know that we could move there and have a bunch of money and we don't need a single thing to happen to us for us to live a great life the next 40 years, would you want me to continue to be disrespected or would you rather me quit football? And it's quit football or find a new place to play. And I think that Shailen Woodley and the circle around Aaron Rodgers, they've kind of deemed that, hey, you haven't been treated right at all. You haven't been respected. You haven't been paid the way you should have been. And you just had the best season of your career by literally every metric that exists, other than like adjusted net yards per attempt. He was a little higher in 2011. And they don't even want to pay you. And they want Jordan Love to play. So get out. And I think that he's really on his way. I really think he wants to leave. And I think that that's the only reason you skip OTAs. Because if you only wanted the general manager gone, you go to OTAs and you have the power of, you have the bully pulpit here, Aaron. You can go to OTAs, you can grab the nearest reporter, you can have them come up to you and you go, hey, I'm here for the team, but I just want everybody to know that these OTAs will be the last offseason workouts I show up to and the last Packer event I show up to unless Brian Gutekunst is no longer the general manager and Ted Thompson is no longer the president by the end of this week. He could say that. He could say that. And guess what would happen? Those guys would be gone.
Absolutely. They'd be fired.
Well,
there's a reason they make a lot less money than Aaron Rodgers does.
Although, would the board of the Packers really approve that? That's the thing. If it were one owner, it's no question. But they're thinking about the long-term legacy of the Packers because the Packers can't juice attendance because of a big city. They got to have a good team.
Which, and this is what I wanted to get to with the Packers that's so complicated that I feel, I don't know if I want to say I feel for them, but I don't think there's a better way to put it. The Packers have a extremely difficult time at convincing free agents to come to Green Bay. It's cold. It's not a city. Even Cincinnati is, right?
Yeah, you can, like, when you go through Cincy, or every major market that has an NFL team, you can see places or neighborhoods or nooks or crannies like, hey, that's where players would live.
Yeah.
You don't see that in Green Bay.
No, and so that's my thing about, like, so Denver, like when I think about Denver and them not having a quarterback or a good team, it bothers me because Denver's a great city. People like to live there. Like that's a failure. When you look at the Packers, they have to look at this from a draft standpoint. That's why they drafted Rodgers after Favre. It's why they drafted Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. Because they cannot go convince insert name here to come and be their quarterback. They have to do that in the draft. And then guess what we saw, for example, in Cincinnati this summer? Every free agent that signed with the Bengals mentioned Burrow, right? Defense, offense, it doesn't matter. And it's the same thing in Green Bay. There has to be a presence there that you want to go play with. Yeah, looks like a lot of fun to go play with Brett Favre. I'm going to go play in Green Bay. That'll sell at least some people, some free agents. You know, same thing. Jordan Love, when he gets out on the field, if he looks anything like Patrick Mahomes or whatever, you may have it, people might be like, oh, I want to go play in Green Bay for that guy. And that's what's happened with Rodgers. And that's why Green Bay has to look at this quarterback situation from a draft standpoint. So you understand their side. But again, you understand Rodgers' side of, one, you're ahead on this. He could play another 5 years at this level. Absolutely.
Or at least 80% of this level, which is probably better than Jordan Love will ever play.
And I think the sad thing about this whole situation is that Jordan Love very likely may never take a significant snap in Green Bay. If this story unfolds, Rodgers stays. And then you go look at management and say, wow, that was a mess. You ruined one guy's career because he never got to play. Or maybe he at least gets traded somewhere. Never takes a snap for you, and you wasted. They traded up to get Jordan Love, didn't they not?
Yes.
Right? So you trade up for a guy who might never take a significant snap for you.
Yeah, but when take
you
the L.
You could have had weapons. Oh,
take the L. Know when you're wrong and admit it, right? That's how you keep a relationship.
Really, the best thing that could happen here, if general management and board and president wanted to be ahead on this, it would be a Jordan Love trade. I don't care if it's a fifth-round draft pick.
I don't think anybody's going to give him a fifth round. You know why? Because if Aaron's making all this stink, if Jordan Love could really play, they wouldn't care. They'd be like, see ya.
But that's the
other
thing.
Go ahead and retire.
That's the other thing. I don't think Jordan Love can play.
No, that's why they're like, oh my God, we can't lose Aaron, right? If Jordan Love were that dude, that guy. Okay, let's put it. Brett Favre's second year in the league. Let's see. Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 years, okay? If after the 2005 season, Brett Favre had won an MVP instead of doing what he did, which I'm going to go pull this up here real quick. Brett Favre went 4-12 Aaron Rodgers' rookie year.
20 touchdowns and 29 interceptions.
20 touchdowns and 29 interceptions. So it's a different situation, Green Bay. You know, and everybody's kind of equating this. Like, it's just a different situation. Let's go ahead and see what Favre did all 3 years that Rodgers sat on the bench. So in 05, we just read the numbers. Rodgers had less than 20 attempts all six of these seasons. 06, 18 touchdowns, 18 picks for Brett Favre.
And they threw the ball 613 times.
My gosh. Why didn't they go to Aaron earlier? I mean, Aaron's missing 3 years of stats. And then Brett Favre, his last year as a Packer, went 13-3, 28 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. And then Aaron was ready to play. So maybe the Packers think, hey, It's the Brett Favre situation. We need to wait 3 years, but we're going to get the same type of player at the end of it. I just think that's silly. I think that's really, really silly. And in 05, when they drafted Rodgers and Brett Favre had that bad of a year, there was no L to hold. You clearly made the right decision because the guy threw 29 picks. There was no L to hold. In this situation, the guy won the MVP and went to the NFC Championship game and had the best year of his career. You're going to have to hold an L. And that's how you keep relationships. You got to know, oh, man, I made a mistake there. Should not have stayed out that late. Should not have done this. I'm going to admit it. I'm going to take the L. And know what? It'll be embarrassing for me. I have to admit I'm wrong. But at the end of the day, you keep this thing that's clearly very important, which is this quarterback organization relationship, especially in Green Bay. Green Bay's like an ugly dude, real ugly dude. And this is a model that really likes his personality. And you can't go around treating your model girlfriend like this when you're Green Bay. Like, it's just, it's never going to work out for you. It's never going to go well. And it's clearly what's happening right now. And I really don't think he's going to be a Packer this year. As of right this second, if I had to guess, I would say Aaron Rodgers will not take a snap for the Green Bay Packers this year.
I don't have a prediction. You're looking at me like maybe I have one. I have no clue how this story ends. I have no assumption. I have no inclination because at this point, we know Green Bay's GM and president are staying. I still think I think it's more possible, the most possible outcome to me, and again, we disagree here, but I think the most possible outcome is no outcome. Rodgers decides to not play football anymore. I think that's very possible.
I think so too. That's why I don't say I think he's going to take a snap in Miami this fall. I don't think he's going to take a snap with the Packers again. And I think that he has that power to retire. And do you know who his agent is? It's the same one Carson Palmer had when he retired from the Cincinnati Bengals. So if I were Green Bay, if Jordan Love could play, as soon as this rumor came out, I would have hopped on draft night, ate the salary for this year, gotten Blake Bortles anyway, say, hey, Jordan Love's not ready, sit him for a year, tank next year, get a lot of high draft picks. You'd have gotten 3 first-rounders for Rodgers on draft night. You could have pressured somebody into it. And they didn't do that. They sat on their hands. They waited. Now, if Rodgers retires, they'll be lucky to get a first and a second round, which was the package the Bengals got from the Raiders for their elite franchise best quarterback. And that's just going to be a shame. Okay, let's switch our attention to baseball in the city after we click out of these Aaron Rodgers pages here. Rough week for the White Sox. Rough week. 26-19 now, only a game and a half ahead of the Cleveland Indians. A sweep against the New York Yankees, Max. And a rough one, too. A lot of bad stuff happening. Some big moments. Vaughn with a ninth inning home run. Good pitching performances. Nothing too bad. They hung in there. But you face Gerrit Cole. It's rough. You get a triple play in the top of the ninth inning in game one. It's rough. And then you play a close game against the Yankees and lose 5-4. I mean, this just feels like one of those series where you say, it's baseball. It's baseball.
Well, and I think the other thing about this series is that it's like any young team, any young up-and-coming great team. You're on the road against a historic franchise. You have an extremely difficult task, and you prove that you weren't ready. But guess what's nice about not being ready? It's May, right? You got challenged in May.
Yeah.
And this is the closest they'll have in the month of May to playing what feels like a playoff series, right? And I think that they realize that there are some things that maybe La Russa's right about them not being ready and needing to take things seriously and needing to have a different level of focus against different types of competition. Yes, this game is a lot of fun, but you have to take it very seriously against other teams that take it seriously. And if there's one thing I know about those in pinstripes, they take this game very seriously. And the White Sox, you know, played good enough. They definitely should have gotten a game out of this series.
Yeah, I think this was a series the White Sox played well enough to get a game, and the baseball gods didn't put it that way. Which, by the way, it's not embarrassing to only take one of three at Yankee Stadium.
It's not embarrassing to get swept at Yankee Stadium.
No, it's not.
This is not embarrassing at all, especially because the White Sox took care of their business against the Royals like they needed to. They took care of business against the Twins. You know, as long as you're winning baseball games, you can get swept. It's baseball. It's a long season.
Yeah.
You're going to have winning streaks. You're going to have losing streaks. And you just hope that the losing streaks are a heck of a lot shorter than the winning streaks.
Well, promos are back at Comiskey 2. They've got Change the Game long sleeve shirt this week. Tim Anderson bat flip bobblehead. Going to be a big week. Cardinals, Orioles. Seven games, because really, I really just want to look week to week. That's kind of where we are with the White Sox now. We know what this team is. We know what their strengths are. We know what they could use. I think right now, if you had to choose an elite back-end bullpen arm or another starter, elite starter, what would you do if you're the Chicago White Sox?
What did they need in this series?
Man, really another bat almost.
Right. And so I think that's the thing, honestly, that we're looking at with this lineup. We've been talking about what they need, and we've thought pitching for a long time. But at the end of the day, I think against the greatest competition, they need another bat. I think that's an absolute fact. It doesn't matter. You can put up 16 against Minnesota, but here's the thing. You know how you wear down great starters in the playoffs, the Gerrit Coles of the world?
Have great bats.
You can't, you know, and there's guys in that lineup, love them. Right? Vaughn hitting that home run the other night.
It just sucks. Right? You got Eloy and Robert out, and I really just would love everybody being healthy and then see.
But that's not baseball. Baseball, not everyone is healthy. That's why you have utility men over the years who have significant roles on significant teams. Ask Boston Red Sox fans about Brock Holt, right? Really important. Can play all over the field. You know, he did some very important things for those teams, right? And that's really important. You know, look at the Cubs. Look at the Cubs and the Rays. When were they great? What was the guy they had in their lineup? Ben Zobrist. Can play the outfield. He can play the infield. Great bat. You can plug and play. And the White Sox just probably don't have that guy.
Yeah, well, Billy Hamilton's probably getting too many at-bats, to be frank. But that's going to happen. Let's go ahead. We're pulling up the reference page now. Because I really want to make sure we come to a solid conclusion, at least where we stand right now. What do we go get? And then we'll have the same conversation with the Cubs before we get out of here of what their roster's like. If we look at their OPS Plus, which, if you don't know, OPS Plus 100 is the current league average. So that number never changes. It's a great way to look historically and where your team stands currently. It sucks because Luis Robert had a 131 OPS Plus, and we won't see him for a while. I love that Grandal's coming around. It's just, I love this. He's a 121 OPS plus, a 141 batting average. So this is one of those, if you're looking at classic stats, you have no idea the value that Yasmani Grandal is providing to this lineup at the current moment. He's hitting balls out. He's taking a lot of pitches. He's got 395 OBP, which leads to
37 walks. 37 walks. Which 32 games.
Oh, yeah, and he's only behind, while batting, 141, which he will not bat 141 all year. He is only behind Mercedes and Moncada for on-base percentage, right? And so here's the OPS plus for the White Sox lineup. Yermin, still at 161 OPS plus. That's probably going to keep falling. So you might be right about a bat, because I think Yermin's going to end up being a 295 hitter for his career. I think that's probably where his talent level is. We'll see if he can become a 30 home run guy, maybe. I think he's got the power to do it. So I expect that OPS plus to fall back from 160 down to like 130. Moncada's probably going to do what he is doing. Abreu's probably going to get better as the year goes along. Grandal's OPS is going to go up because he's going to have more base hits start falling. Tim Anderson, I think, could have an even better year than he's having right now. I think he's going to end up batting in the 320s. I mean, this is a guy that's won a batting title. He's batting 297 right now. Vaughn feels like he's really hitting his stride. I love Madrigal. He's only a 96 OPS plus, but that's right near league average, and he's so good in two-strike situations that I just think he's a great back-end guy. You have Adam Eaton and then Lory Garcia. I think it's a deep lineup. Garcia, I did not know he was having that bad of a year. We're looking at this now.
Boy. Honestly, looking at these numbers, really, to me, it reinforces the need for another bat. To me.
Well, let's go look at the arms.
Well, what I want to go see, if you don't mind, we can look at arms next, but also I'd like to see, like, Angels and Dodgers lineup. I want to see up and down what their OPS pluses are.
Well, let's look at who do you think is the number one contender in the AL against the White Sox? Let's look at their lineup. The Yankees? Do we want to just do the Yankees?
I would say Yankees, and then as the year winds, I think Astros as well, but we can look at Yankees.
Let's do Yankees. Right, because we know their lineup's better than the Indians. We know their lineup's better than the Royals.
And I feel bad. The Red Sox are getting so much disrespect, but they have the best record in baseball, don't they?
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know off the top of my head. The standings change every day. I know they're in the running for it, but the Yankees are the best team in that division, and that's definitely how we're going to see it end up playing out, in my opinion, because this is a lot of depth here. We click their OPS plus of qualified bats, and the White Sox have more hitters. As we're doing the live research, you've got Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Gio Urshela, Gleyber Torres, the only guys with an OPS plus over 100. When you look at the White Sox lineup, they currently have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys with an OPS plus over 100.
And Andrew Vaughn and Nick Madrigal are right there.
Right there near league average. So I think the White Sox lineup is deep, and this is a team with injuries too, because this is just qualified bats. If we go click RBIs and sort by that, you'll see all the bats, and there's a bunch of bats that have a pretty good OPS plus that don't pop up in the qualifieds. Like Jake Lamb is a 106 OPS plus.
Mendick's
doing pretty well. We look at the White Sox rotation and bullpen, and it is awesome. Rodon and Lance Lynn are over 250 ERA plus because they're both sub-1.6. Kopech has a 1.91 ERA. That puts him at over 200 ERA plus. That means he's a better pitch. You have to double the average pitcher's production to get even close to Michael Kopech.
Look at Carlos's FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. 1.91. Yeah. That's nuts.
Rodon, he's going to win the Cy Young. I think that we are on the trend now. 7 starts. That's a big sample size. You've got a no-hitter in there. He didn't fall off after that. In 7 starts, he's given up 6 earned runs. I think Rodon is definitely going to be a Cy Young guy. So you really look at this and go, well, I guess the White Sox don't need to add anybody. But because you look at this rotation, Giolito, Keuchel, Cease, Lynn, and Rodon, that is a great rotation. They're all over 96 OPS plus. I think maybe a frontline arm makes this team elite, but what are you going to give up to get it? That's the real question with the Chicago White Sox.
But that's the nice thing about how well-constructed this team is again, we have discussed how the best move might be no move, right? You're going to get healthier in the lineup, which we know, and your arms are as good as they need to be. You know, you get one more late-game reliever, but again, there's no required move here.
Yeah, well, I don't think you make a move. I think you go get a bullpen arm because those are cheaper. Right? Because I like Hendricks, I do not trust Liam Hendricks for some reason. Every time he's out there on the mound, it looks like he's huffing and puffing and pushing and grinding, and I'm not sure I'd trust him in a playoff series, Max. That's just me. Now, I think Liam's going to be the closer. They spent a lot of money on him this offseason. I think he's going to close out playoff games. But, God, wouldn't you like to have another option back into the bullpen that's pushing 99? You know, I know you're not going to go get Aroldis Chapman, but that type of player, maybe somebody's out there like that. I haven't really looked at who's on the final year of their deal in terms of bullpen arms around the league. But if Lucas Giolito can continue to turn it around, we see his ERA plus sneaking back up to league average. He's at 4.35 ERA. If Giolito can be a guy that's one of the top 10 pitchers in the American League, as he's been for most of the prime of his career, then you've got a real situation where I would agree with you. Hey, maybe add a bullpen arm, but don't give up Vaughn. Don't give up Madrigal. Don't give up Kopech. Don't give up any of these good prospects. Don't give up anybody that's 23, 24 for the sake of winning a World Series this year, because you might have the squad now if Giolito can pitch the way we know he's capable of pitching, being a 3-4-1, 3-4-8 guy when he's at 4-3-5. And that's where I stand on the White Sox. Sweep of the Yankees, not panicked about it. I don't think anybody out there should panic about it either. Just kind of the reality of the situation. It's baseball. It's going to happen. So we switch our attention to the Northsiders and the Chicago Cubs, who, man, every time Cubs fans try to give up on this team, the Cubs find a way to rope them back in. They have another big series against St. Louis where they are very successful against the St. Louis Cardinals. What are your thoughts on the Cubs right now? Above 500, only, as we triple check the standings here, only two games back in the NL Central, 24-22 record, 7-3 in their last 10, and they lead the National League Central in run differential. The back end of the bullpen's performed very well. The starters are sneaky good, although I don't know if that's going to last. Hendricks, Davies, Alzolay, is that really the top three that's going to win the NL Central? I don't think so.
But I think it is. I think it could be. I think that actually what we're seeing is the formula for winning the NL Central is...
Yeah, we've been saying this, the NL Central's weak.
And I think, again, the indication... I'm not trying to be critical of the Cubs, but I just think the fact of the matter is that this is more of an indication of the division than it is anything else. The team that has the best record against teams that are 500 or above, the team that wins a lot of games at home and hovers around 500 away, that's going to be the team who wins the division. And right now, the Cubs are doing all those things. 11-9 against teams that are better than 500. They have a 16-9 record at home, and they're around 500 on the road, right? And so they're not doing anything extremely fancy, not doing anything crazy. But the thing too is that if you look at that lineup, teams in this division that are going to win it have to have the Matt Duffys of the world,
yeah.
Right? I mean, someone who we didn't think or didn't know would be a big contributor, who's a huge part of this lineup. We know Chris Bryant is a huge part of this lineup. We know Rizzo is. We know Contreras is. We know Javi Baez is. But Matt Duffy, that's nice. Ian Happ finally coming along, it seems like, nice. Jock Peterson, a good power bat, nice, right? It's a well-constructed team. You're going to win some ball games, and when your competition hasn't really done anything else, you're gonna have a real chance to win the division, and that's what's going on in the NL Central.
They have a little more holes in their lineup than the Southsiders. You know, Hayward's been the bane of a lot of Chicagoans' existence over the last few years. But when you look at their ages, this is a team that should be buying. This is a team that has a very, very, very elite core.
Doesn't it feel like Anthony Rizzo's been playing for like 15 years?
I know, and he's been great for the whole time.
And he's 31.
You have Bryant, Rizzo, Contreras, Baez. Four big bats that any other team in the National League would kill for.
Also, for the record, Rizzo is not great. Rizzo is thought of as great because he's on the Chicago Cubs. He is a league average first baseman. He's a Sean Casey of the world. Go look at his career numbers.
Yeah, we'll pull him up.
I mean, he's not...
I'm not disagreeing with
him. I think he's career batting average, you know, is obviously it's below 300. I think there it is. 270 career hitter.
Three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove, one Silver Slugger.
He has not been an All-Star since 2016. He has not hit more than 32 home runs ever. He has not hit 30 home runs in over 4 years.
But he's an above-average major league hitter, according to OPS+.
But he is also, if you think about position, he's a major league first baseman.
That's true.
That's truly what he is. He is not a Hall of Famer. He's a Cubs Hall of Famer. He will not be a baseball Hall of Famer, and I love Anthony Rizzo.
Unless he starts now, like raking hard now. He could maybe, but I don't know. No MVPs.
Also, there's a chance, too, he could be a Hall of Famer purely because he's been so healthy in his whole career. He might play forever and could, you know, have 2,500 hits. And, you know, I don't think he'll get to 500 home runs, but he could get up to 450 or whatever it may be. So maybe that would turn him into a Hall of Famer, but it wouldn't be because if you think about Hall of Famers, most of them at some point completely dominated the game, right? Mm-hmm. I've never thought of Rizzo as dominating the game.
No, he's
baseball.
Never been dominant.
No.
Even in 2016, when he finished fourth in MVP voting, he only had 32 home runs and his OPS plus is only 143. So not even 50% better than league average.
But anyways, on the Cubs, though, again, you have some guys who are playing better than expected, taking on an important role that maybe you didn't expect. Rotation has been better than most thought.
Got Dan Winkler, 18 games out of the pen, a .59 ERA. I mean, you got an old, experienced bullpen. See, this is what happens in baseball. You get a sneaky bullpen like this with guys like Brothers, who's 33, Tapara, who's 33, Chaffin, who's 31, Kimbrel, who's 33. You have Maples coming out of the pen, who's 29. 31, Dan Winkler, right? And it's just this weirdly old relief pitching staff. Because the top six qualified pitchers for the Cubs in terms of ERA plus are all relief pitchers. There's not a single starter for the Chicago Cubs with qualified innings in Major League Baseball that is even over a 90 ERA plus, which means the entire Cubs staff, the entire Cubs starting rotation is 10% worse than league average.
Also, I love, again, looking at FIP, which is, again, fielding independent pitching. It's one of my favorite stats. If you look at the Cubs' rotation, it is bad.
Five, 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 five.
That's not good.
It's not an Arby's deal. It's FIP. You don't want to be in the fives.
No.
So, yeah, I don't think this is sustainable for the Chicago Cubs long term. And this is why you pay Yu Darvish. This is why you take a shot at it. Because if you just had one or two elite arms on this staff, you could buy one more piece, try to juice this thing, win the division, and maybe you win the World Series. And you're not gonna have to sacrifice too much of your future. Look, their best starting pitcher right now is Alzolay. And he is gonna fall off. Do you think he's gonna hold that all year, the 4-3 ERA, when he's reliant so much on swings and misses? I just think that there's gonna be a few outings that he gets really crushed. And he might be a decent pitcher, but if I'm just hearing about you when you're 26 and you're a pitcher and you're a 4.33 ERA and that's getting people excited, I don't really know.
I will say that his whip is phenomenal. I mean, he's averaging having less than a runner on base every inning against him. But what's hurting him is that he's given up 9 home runs. That's a home run a start.
Yeah, 9 strikeouts per 9, but a home run a start, that's going to turn to 2 home runs, 3 home runs in a start. You start to
absolutely
walk some guys, you get a tight zone, and that's how you give up 70
runs. World, there's a world that exists where he could give up 40 home runs this year. That's not a good thing either.
No. So the Cubs rotation, not good enough. Relief pitching is very good, though. So there is
I just struggle to see. I think that someone who we think of as having a good lineup in the Central, like I think the Cardinals or the Brewers or even the Reds, I think someone is going to get hot. And I just don't see a world that exists where the Cubs are that 10-15 win streak team.
They don't have the starting pitching to do
that. They're not going to be that hot. And so the Cubs win the division if no one else gets hot, but someone will, right? But the Cubs could very well win the division if it stays as stagnant as it is. But the Reds have two guys who can be in the MVP conversation in their lineup, Castellanos and Winker. And somehow they're below .500.
So they've got more boppers, more bats, more frontline guys. But what I like about the Cubs is if you have Darvish, the rotation's not there, but you could get one more arm and you've got a good enough bullpen and a good enough lineup that if things broke right, you could win a World Series. I mean, hell, look at the 2015 Royals. Name me a hitter off that team. Exactly.
Alex Gordon.
Mike
Moustakas.
Moustakas saw that team?
Moose came up nice through the Royals, yes.
Gordon. Okay. Like, I think the Cubs lineup is better than that 2015 team.
It absolutely is better than
and
the
so in that.
Hosmer was on that team, too, by the way.
And that 2015 Royals team had a very young bullpen, and they were like these new guys, new arms, and they were
that was coming for a long, long time, that Royals World Series. They had stocked their minor league system. That was well done. That's a fun memory. I like that team a lot, just on a side note. If you want to go watch some fun baseball, the Royals in both of their World Series that they got to play in, that was a fun couple of World Series.
I think the Cubs lineup is better than the Cardinals. I think we saw that this weekend. You just like the Cardinals starting pitching, man. They're always good at this.
You just like the Cardinals as an organization. They're just a very, very well-run organization.
Yeah, well, it's like every time, I never hear of a guy before he pitches for the Cardinals. I heard about Gerrit Cole before he made his start for the Pirates. I have never heard or any excitement about a Cardinals starting pitcher in the preseason.
And they're all studs.
And at the end of the year, everybody's got a 2.5 ERA. I mean, it's really incredible. They are arguably the best organization in baseball because of their financial situation, because of what they need to do with the stadium, because of how they continue to pack it, because of the type of organization they are. So the Cubs, let's go the two paths of their approach towards July. Let's say we get near the trade deadline and the Chicago Cubs are within 3 games of the division, or they have a lead in the division, a slight lead. So things are going really well. They're above 500. What's your move if you're Jed Hoyer? Because they've already picked their path somewhat. So
my move, not if I'm Jed, if I'm me, would be to buy.
If I'm Jed, I'd probably.
Jed is probably going to stand pat in that situation. He's not going to sell, but he's not going to buy.
You got to sell. Are you going to sign these guys to contracts? That's the thing is I'm not going to sit here and do nothing at the trade deadline. I promise you that. Either we're going to go all in on this little group of 4 hitters with Matt Duffy coming up, and we like Ian Happ, and we think Peterson can hit the ball out in a series. And you know what? Alzolay will figure some stuff out, and I'm going to go for it by getting another starting pitcher and hoping that the bullpen can hold on and we piece it together. Or I'm selling the farm, and I'm burying the Cubs for the next 2 years. I feel like you've already kind of picked that path, right? I mean, because Bryant's contracts do, Rizzo's contracts do, Baez's contracts do. Those are big decisions for this organization because you take those 3 names out of this lineup and this is the last place team in the National League.
I think the easiest part of this decision is that who's youngest. That's all right. You're going to sign one of them. And I think Javi Baez gets signed. They already offered. We know they offered him a big contract extension, which he turned down pre-COVID. But if you've offered it to him before, you're probably still sold on him being the anchor. I'm glad I brought that up because that's your indication right there. We didn't hear about a Bryan extension. We didn't hear about a Rizzo extension, but we heard about a Javi Baez extension. I don't think your perspective changes on that. No. The only thing that could change is that if you're in a financial predicament like they seem to be, the only thing that changes is you might not offer any of them, and you might sell them all, like the Reds did after they hosted the All-Star game, right, in 2015. It could be a fire sale.
Just rob the fans. Oh, we got a great team. Everybody come to the All-Star game. And thank you. Head out the door, Todd Frazier. Head out the door, Jay Bruce. Head out the door, Aroldis Chapman. Head out the door, Johnny Cueto.
But Homer Bailey can stay.
Homer Bailey can stay. You know what? That whole list I read, they're all still in the major leagues. They all could have kept playing. But, you know, that's me. If they trade Chris Bryant, he's going to win an MVP somewhere else.
Absolutely. We all know that. But that's the thing is that Bryant is not a Cub. So what do you do? This is a very similar situation to Rodgers. Like Bryant, unless something changes massively over this season, Chris Bryant is not a Chicago Cub. But now you're in a catch 22 because if you want to win a World Series this year, you need him on the team.
Yep.
However, at the same time, you know he's going to walk and you would get a lot for him.
Can he play outfield?
Yes. He plays all over the place.
Shy Sox, give him a call. You know, stay in the same city.
But you know who did that was Joe Maddon. He turned him into a more versatile player. And here's the weird thing, too. This is also when it started changing. When Maddon started playing him at multiple positions, people started thinking of him or talking about him like he was a Ben Zobrist, which I think Bryant is a cocky, confident guy. He's like, I'm not Ben Zobrist. I'm an MVP.
Yeah. Very successful player. I think that he doesn't want to be here anymore. I really think that what they did to him in the rookie year and then this selling off pieces, I just don't think he's excited about it. And I think that he came out really focused to make sure that he's playing at an MVP level so that he can do the Mookie Betts thing.
It just feels like Harper and the Nationals, right? Like, it just, the relationship wore out. It was fun. you know, there was some great memories and great times, but it's time for a new place. And I think Bryant's in that situation, which is why it's really difficult if you're in the shoes of management for the Cubs, because you don't want him to leave for nothing, but you also can't really survive, play winning baseball without him.
No. And that's why I think the nightmare is happening for Jed Hoyer. This team is going to be just close enough that he would get crushed if they sold. But they're not going to be close enough to where if they bought, they would actually be a World Series team. Because the level they would have to buy at to become a World Series team, because they didn't keep an arm like Darvish, right? Because they didn't add anything in the offseason in free agency, the level they would have to buy to become a World Series contender is probably a price tag that's too high. You're probably going to have to mortgage your entire future, which might not be the best plan, especially for a guy who's got his little 3-year grace period as the new general manager of the Chicago Cubs. I just don't think it's something that Jed's going to do. So I think you're right. I think it's either going to be a stand pat or a sell-off, unless they're like way in first place. And I don't see that happening when you don't have a single starting pitcher that's league average. I just don't see that happening. All right, anything else from you, buddy? No? Good?
It was a good show.
Yeah.
Really big show.
Recap the week from the White Sox. Recap the week from the Chicago Cubs. We discussed the Aaron Rodgers situation. A very fun episode of On the Shore. And we want to thank everybody so much for listening to the show today. Please follow us on Twitter at Max McDoolin, at More Lucas on Twitter. I'm Lucas. That was Max. We appreciate you listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow, rate, share. All of that really helps us. And it helps other Chicago sports fans or other fans of sports in general find our podcast. Really appreciate it. Have a good one.